It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Hola, senor.
Hola, senor. You were, I don't know, how do you say, hello in Italian?
Buongiorno.
Oh, buongiorno.
Something like that. But I was in Spain first, so I was giving you the hola from Spain.
Oh,
first.
Sorry, God.
It's okay. You were a little.
You went to Spain, and then you went to see the Pope.
I went from Spain to England.
Oh.
Of course, it was only a little spot on Gibraltar, which actually England owns that little tip of Spain, so they're not happy.
So what did you do at Gibraltar?
We just looked at the big rock and...
Just spoke to the sea?
Watched the monkeys run around and...
Monkeys?
Yeah, we took a cable car thing up to the top of the hill and
you
monkeys.
You took a cable car? Now, wait a minute. No. Do you have proof?
It's the only way to get there. Yeah, I got pictures. I got pictures. I went
you in a cable car?
How'd that work? You know what? I'm alive.
Is it the greater works?
I just sat on the floor and cried until we got to the top. It's not that big of a cable car. It's not the one Sarah was on in the Alps a few years ago. I still today would not be able to make it on
you
that
you in a cable car, though.
I was in a cable car.
I mean, I don't understand how you can go up to 30,000 feet in a tube in a plane and feel less secure than in a cable car. I mean, I kind of like, aren't they sort of...
Oh, really? You don't? We're talking cables and pulleys and things that break and fall and people die.
And planes that are in the midair.
Occasionally that happens. I don't mind flying at all. It's the crashing I don't like, as
okay,
they say.
All right. Well, go technical. All right.
So I was in England just briefly, and then we went back to Spain and then over to Italy. And great trip, actually.
Yeah?
Fun stuff. Fun stuff in Spain. We didn't do much touring in Spain. We were pretty busy just hanging out with people. And talking about the journey. And
what are people in Spain doing?
There's a lot of people that have read He Loves Me, and some you don't want to, so you don't want to church anymore. And at least the people I'm hanging out with, which is obviously people who came to the meeting I was at, but it's just a real passion, a real seeing through the frailties of our church systems and trying to find a life somehow, somewhere, and passionate calling to try and figure out who Jesus is and the love of the Father and how that works out. So we had a great retreat over the weekend. Saturday morning was probably as powerful a time as I've had sharing the cross with a room full of people. Because mostly when I share it, it's people are like, wow, really? And it's so different from what I've heard. It's really a processing thought process, which...
Right.
I don't mind. I think that's important and valuable. But this was very, very different. I mean, they were ready because it wasn't people like, wow, is that possible? It was people going, you got to be kidding. And people were just crying. People were just, it was amazing. It was this powerful, a room full of people coming alive in a reality of the cross.
Now, is this in English or is it being translated?
Being translated.
Wow, that's challenging.
Yeah, questions and answers, translation. I mean, there's all kinds of working around the translation part of it. But, yeah, I came away just in the afternoon, sat in our room for a minute and just said, God, that was absolutely incredible. I just really didn't deserve that, didn't earn that, would never earn that in a million years. And it was fun to see. And
we're
then
not on that treadmill.
To go back on in the afternoon and evening and talk further with people, and it was a different conversation now because people were seeing a reality. So they weren't still, what about this, what about this, but now how do I live this way? And, man, that just makes God so much more.
So these are believers.
Yeah.
And they're just seeing it from a total different lens. Were they embracing that sense of cure? What was the big transition if you...
I think for them, as it was for me, is you finally see the Father as a good guy in that story.
As opposed to a punisher.
Yeah, as opposed to the angry, offended deity that's got to somehow be served. And I think people awoke to that, awoke to what Jesus went through, to what his Father went through, and his Son dying, and him being the surgeon that's part of effecting a cure that's costing his Son dearly, but it has to be done. And And seeing that as a really loving collaboration and not just Jesus had to die to make God whole. Yeah. So it was pretty cool. I loved it. And then the next morning I got to breakfast. This was an interesting discussion before we may not even get to Rome if we get here. But at breakfast, one of the ladies came up and said, there's about five of us that would like to have a conversation with you if we could before our morning meeting. And our morning meeting was delayed because the facility we were in is a group who owns it, uses it for a service on Sunday morning, a religious event. So we were going to start after their deal. So we had a little bit more relaxed time in the morning. So we took some chairs and went out under a fig tree, and they were just wanting to talk. And there were a couple of really big item issues. You know, one was a woman whose husband had died a few years ago, mid-50s, a great believer, I guess, one of the major catalysts to God's working among that group of people. He got cancer, and despite all their praying and everything, he died, and they've all felt the loss of that. And that happened, boy, I'm going to probably get this wrong, but my best thought would be maybe 3 or 4 years before I'm there. So how, if God loves us, how does he let that happen, was the question. And then there's a bunch of women, of those five women, they all work in a ministry to abused women, which I guess is pretty big in Spain. And I mean, sexual abuse and just major... Yeah, one woman that was there had been raped by her grandfather for 2 weeks every summer from the time she was 6 to the time she was 16, as best I recall the detail. Yeah. And she's praying and begging God. She's begging her mom not to make her go. And her mom and her grandma both know what grandpa's done because he did it to them. But it's still, this is what you do for grandpa. And she was forced to go take a nap every afternoon with the grandpa. And so she's sitting there saying, how do we sort out God loves me? And despite my crying out to him for 10, 11 years of my life, that didn't stop. And that's created, I mean, that's stolen more than just those 10 years.
So where'd you go with that?
You know, I go to my home run answer.
Okay. Swing away, old big hitter.
My home run answer is, I don't know. I don't know. I think the big hope of people in extreme pain, and I got a letter I might read to you, I got it earlier this week, that kind of goes there as well, is that there's the thought that somehow there's a logical answer that I need to put that behind me, or I'm not going to be able to trust the love of this God. And I don't know that answer. For people who've been raped and tormented and abused and no great sickness and congenital illness in their family and a young child, you know, going through stuff. And I say, you know what? And I'm reading Job right now. So this has been kind of an interesting little growth thing for me, because what I found myself saying to them is, I don't know, but I don't know that there is an answer. I think over 2,000 years of New Covenant life, if there was an answer to that, somebody would have found it.
Yeah, there's some smarty pants that would have had that thing locked down.
At least better thinkers than me, for sure.
You know, I look at the whole dynamic of the fact that here you have God, who is a being, who does love me, and then you have these free will other beings that are in the universe that he has allowed decision-making function, and I just go like, he doesn't take that away, even if they tragically do it wrong and impact others destructively.
Yeah, but if he doesn't take it away, is that proof that he's not a loving, kind, and gracious God? And when you're caught in the middle of those pains, I get that.
No, I do get that. I mean, you know, I don't need to compare woes to people, but you just go like, I don't know that there's a single person on the planet that hasn't been touched by pain and difficulty. And I think what bums me out about how religion sometimes has tried to put everything in a nice little box and a formula that has its T's crossed and its I's dotted is like, I don't think we live in that universe.
Yeah, but I've always felt the pressure to answer that question. And the more I talk about God's love, and then people, you know, five of them under a fig tree, tell us, how do you square a loving God with these realities? And I find myself doing is exactly what Elihu does in the book of Job, which is, Job, you don't get it. You don't. But I can't, it's not a get that I can explain to you logically. But I love what Elihu does. see that firestorm over there? See that big whirlwind? That's God. He's going to come and deal with you. And when God comes and deals with Job, Job comes out of it saying, man, I really didn't get it. There were things too wonderful for me to understand. And what I find myself saying to people in that kind of environment is, there is no logical answer to what you're asking. There just isn't. And I can't, at least one that I don't, it's not one I know of. But here's what I sincerely believe. God is big enough to win this in your heart. So go talk to him. Not, God, why did you do this? Because I just think that spirals down into a pit of anguish that there's no ladder to get out of. But I think what the question is, God, would you show me a love greater than my pain? Would you? And I think when God engages a heart and you know how loving it is, you may still not be able to answer, well, then why did that happen? But you now know that is not a challenge to his love. And that's, I think, what people need to know.
I mean, I think for me, and I don't know if this is helpful to other people or not, but I look at the free will decision-making of others that God has allowed to be sort of, quote, the rules of the game on this planet. People get to do what they decide to do, and that can be very destructive to other people. And God doesn't seem to take away their breath and strike them down instantly. When that is the case, the thing that I don't know how to do is, I don't know how to say why that happened. I don't know the answer there. I don't know that there's an answer there. That happened because that person did that. But that person isn't God.
Right.
And so I don't know how to answer that, but I do have to differentiate between, that's not, God is not the ultimate author of everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that I've had to sort of dethrone, and I found that to be incredibly freeing when it's like, not all of these things get hung on his coat hanger.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, no, he didn't do that. So he is wonderful. That's why I like him. That guy is not wonderful. That's why I don't like that guy.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's easier probably to talk about when somebody has suffered abuse at the hands of another, and it's harder when somebody just gets cancer or an accident happens, or, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you do know, I mean, you can't look at...
There's no coat hanger to hang that one on.
You can't even look at the Bible or human history and come out with the conclusion that God always breaks in and stops bad things from happening. You can't get there. Nor can you get, will he mostly break in for people on his home team and keep them from dying in pain and tragedy?
He doesn't.
You can't get there either. Yeah. So... I know one of the guy who was translating me wrote me afterwards, and he said, I was really worried when you said, I don't know, when that was your answer. He said, I so wanted you to have an answer. And I really thought the I don't know answer just basically, you know, dismisses what people are really questioning. But what he said was, the fruit of that has been amazing. And I think one of the freedoms that we get on this journey is, I don't have to justify God. And that looking for an answer to those things, I think, is the person who has suffered tragedy is, so why did this happen? Well, you know, you feel this pressure to somehow have an answer that justifies God. And there's a great freedom. I think it's the freedom of that I don't know home run answer is, it really isn't my job to be God's public relations voice in the world. And I don't know about you.
That's an incredible freedom right there.
That
I quit that
job
a while back.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I think the one thing that I find incredibly helpful, and it doesn't solve all my aches and pains, but it is the assurance and the knowledge that I'm not alone. I don't know. Somehow that mitigates against the worst pain of abandonment.
Yeah, but I think for you... Just knowing you well enough, I would say, I don't think that for you is just a logical conclusion.
No.
Yeah, it
no,
comes.
Just, no,
there's a reality of God's touch in your heart.
No, there's a relational element that just says, okay, the pain is still there, the sad consequence and outcome is still there, and I can't put Humpty Dumpty to get back together again in some parts of my life. You're just going like, that's just broke, and I don't know, and it's such a bummer that it's broke. It didn't need to be broke.
But he is with me doesn't mean I've gone to, you know, Matthew 28, where I'll, lo, I'm with you always, even within the age.
No,
I just,
it's not,
no, it's
a memorized verse. It's a felt presence of just going, I think the most compassionate thing I've felt from God is the idea that he hurts with me. That there's an actual compassion and a sympathy, an empathy from God, that it's like, And I'll be honest, I don't know how to define that theologically, because you're just going like, well, you know, the theologian would say, well, solve it, God. You know, you're powerful, omniscient, omnipotent, all that. And I just sat there going like, I don't know. The thought that he felt my pain and that he cared about me, and somehow that got communicated in a way I understood it, that displaced all of the angst of needing to tie off the why. You know what I mean? It's like,
oh, I absolutely.
I can't do that in my brain. I don't know how to help someone have that. I can say, in the I don't know, go talk to him, is the firm belief that he is there and he can displace that. I think that's the confidence I have for hurting people and myself is, no, I don't know the answer. I don't know why that happened. I recognize the playing field allows for that. But I know he's good. And if you'll allow him, and as opposed to sort of guarding against the, you know, further fear of rejection, if I'll allow him into that, he can displace the anguish that I'm feeling and replace it with a mitigated sense of his comfort and presence. And that is just, that's changed everything for me.
Yeah, and I hope this illustration isn't too trite, because it definitely doesn't compare to the kinds of issues we're talking about. But just like when my granddaughters are over and they want to do something they can't do and you tell them no, and they're really disappointed and maybe even angry, and they don't understand, you know, when kids even pull out that, you know, you don't love me because you don't let me do what I want. But very quickly, if you just get them onto something else, and mm-hmm. and renew that love and affection. I mean, you can be 10 minutes later playing and laughing with the same kid who thought 10 minutes ago you were a total creep because you wouldn't serve their self-interest. I think that's some of what this invites us into. We connect with God in a way that takes us beyond the pain of that thing and even begins to heal us out of the effects of those things. You can't, you know, he'll grieve with us when we're hurting. He'll be inside what bondage might have resulted for someone else's abuse of my life. He's the rescuer. He's the restorer in that story. And part of it, once we get off the, well, why did he let it happen? Which I understand people want to get into that discussion and angst. Man, I've spent most of my life there. So I get why people want that answer. And I've yelled and railed at God. It's interesting reading Job this time around. And I read Job probably every couple of years, but I'm hearing Job say things that I underlined 10, 15 years ago in the midst of my very painful thing and raging and yelling at God and going, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm looking at this time going, even the last worst thing I've been through, I haven't yelled at God through it. I haven't felt this rage. I haven't felt like, God, you owe me better than this. And I used to be such a part of my prayer life. I mean, I would spend months and weeks yelling at God, trying to convince, doing the Job thing, trying to convince you that I'm right. Now I'm reading that stuff going, there's nothing there in my heart. It is, yeah, this situation I'm in sucks. It has put more weight on my life than I've needed to have. But you know what? This is not God's doing. This is not what God has done. And I don't see God could have prevented it. You know, that's the big question. Here's this letter I referred to a little bit ago, Brad, because I just, this one, this is the kind of, Sarah read this first because it came in through the contact email and came up to my office and just sat down. She said, seen your email. And I said, no. And she goes, oh, it's horrible. I go, okay, what happened now? But listen to this. My heart is, this is somebody I don't know at all, just wrote and said, my heart is completely shattered and I have many unanswered questions. On June 12 this year, my 3-year-old son got up from his nap, walked outside, got in our car, the door locked, and we didn't find him in time. He went to heaven 4 weeks ago yesterday. My wife and I are devastated, but hopeful that we know our son is with Jesus. The reason I'm writing you is that I simply don't understand how or even if God allows these things to happen. Is God sovereign? Does he allow evil to take my son? Or did God take him? Or is God simply sitting back watching the world spin out of control and doesn't intervene? Why didn't he save my son? My son and I were home together taking a nap. I was in my room. Jacob was in his. Why didn't I hear him walk outside? All the whys. How does God love us in this? He is either in control of this event or he is not. And I can't reconcile what I'm supposed to do with this loving God who either took my son or allowed evil to do it. And I read something like that, and be honest, I just weep. I weep with this heart. I understand it. I can't imagine the pain of losing a three-year-old kid to something this freakishly tragic. I can't imagine the questions I would have had when my kids were 3 years old with the depth that I was experiencing God at that point. I would have been in this hole with this, and I feel it. I feel it, and but I just began to write him back and say, you know, I understand wanting an answer to all those questions, but I think what you find out at some point is that God's a lover, and though we may never be able to say, did evil do it? I think we get really dangerous ground. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago when people have to say, well, you know, God maybe took your son because something worse was going to happen in the future.
Yeah, I think that's don't fill in those blanks.
Yeah, he was going to be a drug dealer or whatever in his teenager, so God took him now as an act of mercy, and I think that kind of talk is so incredibly insane. But I do have a great heart for this guy to say, you know what, not just go talk to God, but I'm going to pray for you. And I'm going to, you know, ask you to go, God, would you show me a love greater than this? It may take months, it may take years for that reality to sink past this pain in your heart. But it would be better for you now to see God not as the perpetrator outside of the situation, but as the God inside your grief with you to walk you out of it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I totally get what she's written and what he's written and the parameters they put around it. But I end up going like, I don't know that it's this or that, because I end up going like, I don't know how to make life this or that. It doesn't seem to work to me.
No, we set up false dichotomies all the time.
It's like I sort of feel like, no, he is in control, but he is not exerting absolute control. There are things that happen that he didn't author. And is that just evil? I don't know. I think things happen. And I don't always know who to ascribe authorial cause to. You're just going like, I don't know.
Yeah. The regret of the parent is, I wish I hadn't taken a nap that day. Or I wish I would have locked the door. I wish I would have.
Yeah, the pain of rehearsing history and if I'd only, and it's like, you know what? I have no idea what in the world to do with that. That is what happened. That is what transpired. The only comfort I do know is that though everyone else might abandon me, there is one guy that does not. And it may be the one I am most offended at and thought was most powerful to act. And it's like, well, have that discussion. Have that genuine heart-to-heart reality. But don't answer for him.
That's the great freedom. Yeah.
If there's a beauty of Job, it's the fact that, you know what? All his counselors and everyone tried to give the answers. They were doing the PR work. They were doing the formula.
We're trying.
Here's all the math, Job, and it comes up to this answer. And you're just going like, what Job got was an actual conversation with God. And he came to a different outcome because of that. He arrived at a different set of emotional realities because he encountered him, not the math. And, you know, it's like, I got a couple of situations where, you know, we had a glorious weekend, come back on the way home, you know, we get talking about something, and it is just an absolute downer because it's one of these, like, unsolvable situations of heartache. And you're going like, I don't have a solution here. It's a mess, and I can't solve it. And my mom was just absolutely depressed to the point of tears. And I just looked at her and I said, you know what? All I know is that this equation with God concluding it's an unsolvable mess is not true. We're missing some pieces. It's not an insolvable mess. When someone sets up an insolvable solution, an insolvable equation, I just go like, no, God can inhabit that somehow. I don't know how. I don't know what the answer is. But I'm not going to lock myself off in that place of despair because that's not who he is. And I think that's the only thing I know how to do is like, well, those are the fodder for real encounters with God as opposed to the religious ones that I make up in my mind.
Yeah. And maybe part of Job is sometimes you have to exhaust all of your accusations at God before you can finally rest enough to hear him begin to make himself known. I don't think God's offended at our railings. But I love what Paul says in Philippians 3 about God, not just that I may know him, not only in the power of his resurrection. And that's, we all well versed in that. Yeah, when God's power breaks through in a situation and transforms something, like Saturday morning talking about the cross in Spain, that's all great stuff. But there's the other side of that, which is the fellowship of his sufferings. That God suffers with the brokenness of our world. And like you said, God crawls into our suffering. There's a fellowship in the depth of grief and pain and disappointment and anger. There's a fellowship with God inside of that that Paul says is just as important as the power of his resurrection. It's also letting him crawl into the broken places of our life. And for us to hurt with people who go through incredible hurt and pain in their life. And
yeah, you know, I had my oldest son, Jared, he was, you know, we were talking last night, and they were up at some fair in Northern California, and a band was finishing off the set, and it was a Christian band, and they sang this song that, you know, is basically focusing on the whole bit of being forgiven. And it just undid Jared. It's like the lyrics were so close to what he has felt relationally and friendships and different stuff, and just the pain of feeling hurt and betrayed by a couple situations. And somewhere in it, it's like God's presence just inhabited that moment for him, and he just burst into tears. And I wasn't with them, and so Kelly says, you know, did you tell Dad about the concert? And Jared's, you know, you can see it's still fresh, and he starts to tear up. And so Kelly starts to tell me about it and make sure that it's okay with Jared. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, my heart as a dad is just aching for my boy. He's just going like, I wished he didn't feel that. I wished there was something I could do to prevent him from going through that. But at the same time, I'm looking at my own life and I'm going, you know what? It is navigating through those things that has shaped and actually given me some depth of soul. And I don't know that I would trade them. I don't want to go through any of them, but I recognize that, you know, life did not transform me by just dropping rose petals in front of me. You know?
For sure. For sure.
And I had a chance to just talk with Jared. I said, you know what, Jared, the whole bit of being bearers of his life and being able to demonstrate that to the world. I said, I don't understand why it works this way, but I do know that it does work this way. It's almost as if God carves out of our soul through pain and suffering a place for him to dwell. That blessing keeps me going, but blessing doesn't do that to me quite the same way. I don't know that I can survive one without the other and truly be the kind of vessel that is a carrier of his presence. But I do know that the pain that I go through, if it doesn't shipwreck me, those have been some of the more profound things that have helped sensitize me and given me compassion for others and made me a person worth hanging around.
That's cool. I just finished a book the other night, written actually by a friend of mine. He sent me a copy. It's a self-published book, but this is a gem. I get a lot of books sent to me, and most of them I don't even get a chance to read. Dan Mayhew is a brother up in Portland, Oregon. He wrote a book called The Butterfly and the Stone, the subtitle, A Son, a Father, God's Love on a Prodigal Journey. And this is a kid, his third kid in middle school, gets involved with the wrong group, gets into alcohol and smoking. And from then on, he's got a son living a very prodigal life, goes to Iraq in the military. His best friend gets killed over there, one of his best friends. He comes back and just loses himself into alcohol and post-traumatic stress. And this is a father walking alongside a prodigal son. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing about this story, for instance, and I'll do a blog about this for people who want to, I haven't got it written yet, but for people who have a prodigal child, you have a child who's kind of wandering far from who God is and maybe what you raised and hoped for them, this is a great companion to have alongside you. But this book is not just that. This is what you just said about all these deep, dark places of struggle with his son, from, you know, coming home and messing up the house and having to ask his son to leave. And, you know, all going through all that, he has come to grips with how much God loves him in his prodigalness. and all the waywardness of his heart and all the places he got lost and stuck and all the things he goes to medicate his pain. And this is a triumphant story of coming to grips with God's love. And I didn't even plan on talking about this today because I hadn't even done a blog on it yet, but in the midst of your greatest hurt, it's what you just said. And Dan has lived that. And the story's not over yet. The son's not home. There's not a great triumphant finish here.
Right.
The son is still lost in alcohol, and they're trying to sort out what it means to be a father and a son when you've got an adult child, who is lost and says he's been in and out of rehab. He's, you know, comes to places of remorse and regret and tries to change and then gets sucked back into the whole thing he's been part of. But to read a book like this, one, I wept with Dan because I know him well, so I really wept with what he's gone through with his son. At the same time, I saw a lot of me in here, how much God loves me in the places I got lost. And I found myself I finished it the other night, and I just found myself just sitting alone for a while and just telling God how grateful I was for all, and how grateful I am, I guess, for all the ways he's, you know, overlooked the things in my life and kept loving me at my most stupid and most broken and most recalcitrant. And so I just want to recommend this. It's called The Stone and the Butterfly. It's self-published, so the best place to go get it probably is at the website, and it's stonebutterfly, just like it sounds, all one word, .net. And
sweet.
We may talk more. I'd love to get Dan on a podcast. I was saying, if you're ever going to be in L.A. or we have to figure out how we can Skype him sometime into this, that would be a great conversation to have sometime.
Can I tell you an encouraging story?
Yeah.
I think this is encouraging. You know Joplin? The place you get leveled.
In Arkansas that got devastated.
F5 leveled. Just destroyed. I got a phone call from a lady who has been down there just doing some disaster recovery. I mean, she's a businesswoman, and she just felt God nudged her to go down there and just help. And she's got a T-shirt business, and she just came down, and it's like, she just wanted to help people tell their story. I mean, it's weird in terms of going like, well, gosh, that's a weird way to do this. But she was giving voice to what people had gone through. And some of the amazing things was she was getting testimonies from these little kids and how they had gone through the storm and the devastation and how this, you know, this tornado just destroyed everything. And they were okay. And they were writing on the back of these T-shirts, I was saved by the butterfly people. And I'm like, what? What's that about?
Yeah, really.
Well, I ended up getting on the phone with her and saying, I'm intrigued. What are you talking about? She's got scores of these stories that it's a little girl who's in a house. The house gets leveled. She gets sucked up. She is deposited 3 blocks away. The family finds her sitting under a bathtub, totally fine, unharmed, scared, but okay.
Oh, pink? My gosh.
And the daughter says, the butterfly people put me here. And I'm like, butterfly? What?
Who are the butterfly people?
It would be the language of angels if you didn't have the religious...
If you didn't have the language, sure.
...language for it. She's got scores of kids who have these stories where it's in the midst of that, the butterfly people. Heard another story of this tornado coming so fast. The dad, he had like 3 or 4 kids. He had the 2 youngest with him. They couldn't find anywhere to get. It was too fast. And so he had the 2 kids lay down on the ground. He laid over them, dug his hands into the soil as far as he could, trying to get a grip. The tornado came over them with such ferocity, it ripped the soles off of his very shoes. But somehow they weren't sucked up into its vortex and just catapulted someplace. One of his older daughters was in a place of protection, but before they got there, she's looking at her dad, knowing her dad's not going to get there. She finds her dad afterwards, after it's gone over, and she says, Dad, who was that man with wings who was lying on top of you? And you just end up going like, okay, are these like storm legends? I mean, it's amazing stories that I'm just going like, golly, it doesn't seem to have the religious trappings of some trite little thing. In the midst of devastation, these people experience protective care. And I'm just going like, gosh, what a neat little moment of hope to come out of just what is devastation. And the fact that here you got some goofballs talking about, you know, God's judgment. And I just, and they're like, well, okay, well, God somehow didn't didn't tell the butterfly people not to show up and help. And it just is a picture of the fact that, gosh, I don't think we're very good commentators on these moments and the way they unfold, because those are surprising stories of great hope that you're not alone, you know?
Yeah.
And not everyone has those. There are people, I mean, I heard another story of a kid that
people who died in that, man.
Out of a car.
Yeah. Right.
And his dad sitting right next to him, and he could not keep his 16-year-old, 6'4" kid from getting sucked out the sunroof of the car, and they don't have him. And he's going like, okay, I don't understand that. I can't look at this world in a one-to-one correlation. It says, well, those people were saved because, and that guy wasn't because. I don't have any of those answers. I just know that God is not separate from the grief that goes on, and he's not absent from the difficulty.
But I do think there's obviously two ways to look at that stuff in our lives. When it happens, you can focus on the tragedy, who died, what, you know, all that, and where was God, and why did God allow this? Or you can see the way God works in things like that. And I think that's even true in our own lives. We've got to come into that space at some point of saying, okay, yeah, I hate this. My son, 3-year-old, dying in a car, I don't understand it. My heart's in rending pain. And you can always say, God, how are you not there? Or I guess the heart begins to go to a place, God, how were you there, or how are you here now?
Yeah.
And how do you begin to encompass it? And I don't think it's just a matter of, you know, an optimist seeing the glass half full and the pessimist seeing it half empty. I really think there's a place in our heart to say, okay, we don't control the works in this age, but our God is bigger than them.
Yep.
He can overcome them. He doesn't always overcome them. But I don't think either God's measuring all of life just between birth and death here. God has a better view of things to come that we can't even contemplate. And Jacob, what Jacob is and becomes. And that doesn't make it easier that he's not here with us now. But it does give God a better perspective. And somehow there's life and freedom for us to come to a place in him that says, God, show me your love right now, right here in the midst of this, to the woman that had been raped for 11 years. Mm-hmm. God, show me now how you love me and how you want to walk me into freedom. Yes, my mom failed me. My grandmother failed me. My grandpa is an evil, horrible person of which things were probably done to him. But still, God, today, how are you rescuing me, and what freedom can I live in? And, you know, how do you walk with me in my grief and my pain? And to me, that's the God journey. It's not, hey, everything's going to work out great because we get enough of these emails and we have enough life experience ourselves to say, no, even some of the most wonderful things in the world can turn horrible on a dime. But God's still God, and he's still a lover, and he's still in the world, and he still wants to be with you today, right in the middle of whatever it is that's causing you the most question and concern. And maybe he's even got some butterfly people who can land in your heart today and help make sense a little bit of not what happened and why, but who God is in the midst of these things.
See, that's, to me, if all of this, if what it does is it midwifes you into an actual encounter with him, I am done trying to answer for him. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do not know.
That's my home run answer.
I get it. I cannot answer for him. But I can tell you that my own life experience would say, in the midst of that kind of awful whatever, I have found him to be an incredible source of tangible comfort, where it's not just the confession of a verse that says, oh, you promised never to leave me nor forsake me. It's like, no, you didn't. You didn't promise me, last time I checked, a pain-free existence. You did promise that in this life you will have trouble. That's the one that most people don't confess. But we are going to have difficulty. But be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. That's where my hope gets anchored. Not that, oh, please give me the pain-free existence. That one got chucked out the window a long time ago.
Absolutely. Not in this world.
But the idea that it's like, all right, in spite of that, I can be of good cheer. I don't have to be the dour sour hour all the time. Is it gonna hurt? Yeah. Are tears wrong? Not at all. They're helpful. Am I gonna be alone? No. Will I overcome? Well, by his strength and his power, I don't know. I don't have much confidence in, well, I can just gut this out.
Yeah.
It's more like, Lord, help me get there. This is really hard. And that becomes a really great moment to not have religious trite formulas.
Yeah. And there's, and we talked about earlier, there is a great freedom in you not having to do God's public relations. Even those of us who deeply believe in a loving Father, you don't have to explain or find an answer in every circumstance with these false dichotomies we set up. Better to help people just find their way out of those false dichotomies and out of that logical kind of answer I need and into a presence that somehow consumes those questions
mm-hmm.
and just the greatness of who He is.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.